The Something Wild podcast is made possible, of course, by you, our marvelous subscribers and listeners, and by the Courier Museum of Art. Explore the art, science, and adventure of the Northeast's tallest peak in Mount Washington, the crown of New England, through January 16, exclusively at the Courier Museum of Art. More info at courier.org.
I'm Chris Martin from New Hampshire Audubon. This is Something Wild. Christine Rhines is a long-serving and award-winning moose biologist for the state of New Hampshire, the state's first. She's worked for New Hampshire Fish and Game for 33 years, serving as the state's top moose expert for 31 of those. She received the Distinguished Moose Biologist of the Year award from her peers at the North American Moose Conference in 2006. She's a busy person, but she had time to stop by and visit us here at Something Wild. Welcome to Something Wild, Chris.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's nice to be here.
So I know you've announced that you're going to retire from the department here shortly after your long time monitoring moose. I wonder if we could spend some time reflecting on the ups and downs, the highlights of that amazing career. I remember about 26 years ago when I was first in the state, I was a raptor biologist with New Hampshire Audubon, and I think I met you for the first time outside what we lovingly call the Errol International Airport.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes, I do.
What does a moose biologist need to be around planes and airports for?
So back then, we were trying to see if we could do an aerial survey for moose. And we were using a very small fixed-wing aircraft. And boy, we found out in a hurry. Here in New England, where, you know, the weather changes as quickly as night to day, it was not going to work. I mean, we had some really scary times in that plane trying to get a decent aerial survey conducted, and finally we had to give that up. But that's why I was up there.
Moose research still involves a lot of work from the air, I assume, these days.
Yes. Yeah, so right now we're doing a lot of collaring, trying to get good information on mortality and productivity. So every year we hire a capture crew out mm-hmm. of the West, and mm-hmm. they come out here, and they actually capture for Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and New York. They come out for the entire time period.
Moose wranglers.
They are moose wranglers. Yes, they are.
Wow. Wow, that sounds exciting.
Yeah,
did you ever get involved in any of that directly?
Yes, I did. My boss almost, he was quite dissatisfied with me because I did go up and jump out of the helicopter and capture a moose. We weren't supposed to, but, you just couldn't let that opportunity go by.
Oh,
so
my.
Haven't done that since. Well,
so how do you catch a moose?
So we hire these people who, this is what they do year-round, is they capture wildlife out of helicopters. And so the helicopter comes in, they have some idea where moose are. They have to kind of herd the moose out into an opening, doesn't mm-hmm. have to be very big. Mm-hmm. And then the helicopter swoops down, and we call them moose muggers. So these guys...
I was thinking moose mercenaries.
Yeah, yes, much better. So... they leap out of the helicopter. Well, first they shoot a net over the animal. And we prefer netting to darting. You can dart them, but darted animals have a higher mortality rate. Drugging wildlife is a last resort uh-huh. that you want to do. So we shoot a net over them. They're wide awake. They get tangled in the net. They fall down. The moose muggers leap out of the helicopter, run up to these animals.
Wait, from how high in the air do they leap out of the helicopter?
Well, not very high. I mean, okay. The helicopter gets down as close as it can.
I hope they land in a snowdrift.
Some years, this is the problem. We've not had snow.
Oh,
so they're sometimes landing on, hard Ooh. Things. So anyway, they run up to the animal. They immediately put hobbles on their legs. So they've got to be very cautious because the moose are usually still standing.
Oh my.
Only rarely are they down. So they get them down on the ground. From the backside of the moose, they reach over their body, hobble their legs together, put a... I know these guys are great.
I can't believe this.
Yeah, and then they put a blindfold on them, put earplugs in their ears, and then take the net off and put collar on them.
Earplugs in their ears.
Yeah, so they want to soften the noise so the moose can be a little relaxed.
I hope you've got some video of this.
Oh, yeah. There's some great video of these guys doing this. I mean, they do this with bison. Seriously.
Do they ever have a GoPro camera on their helmet when they do this? That would be incredible.
Yeah, some of them have done that. Yeah.
I remember back in the early days, late 80s, early 90s, Cass County was really kind of the epicenter for moose in New Hampshire.
Yes.
It was the place to be. I remember there were entrepreneurs in the North Country who were selling, moose nugget earrings and paperweights and all kinds of things. So the North Country was the place for moose 30 years ago.
Yes.
Is it still the same today?
It's still the same. The highest moose densities still are up north and really always have been. It's just the densities are smaller statewide.
Mm-hmm. What's the reason why the North Country is the place for moose?
Well, they have the best habitat. It's spruce fir. There's a lot of cutting up there, not a lot of people. The cutting is really the most important issue,
why,
and it's colder.
Tell me about why is that.
Well, moose need a lot of food in order to do well, and so whether you have clear cutting to provide that food or you have forest fires to provide food, both of those are necessary. And elsewhere in the state, there's simply not a great deal of cutting.
So moose don't like deep woods as much as they like young forests?
They need both. Because here in the Northeast, we have really, our temperatures are too warm for moose. So they need mature forest to get away from the sun.
Okay.
But they also need that mosaic of freshly growing and older mature timber in order to do well.
So I'm a bird biologist. And
yes.
I work with raptors. And, a lot of birds migrate long distances a couple times of the year. But I know moose don't migrate in that same way. But I do know that they like different types of habitat in the summer versus the winter.
It's quite variable. They are creatures of their stomach. So really, literally. So they just
I can
like
identify
me,
with
you know?
That.
Yeah, I can relate. So they, for instance, in our study area, which is near the Berlin-Cambridge area, in that area, it's a relatively flat plain for New Hampshire. There are some hills there, but the moose pretty much stay down low and near clear cuts all winter long. In other areas, they may move up to be where the snow gets harder and it's easier to move around.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't really make logical sense to me why moose would go up to the ridgetops or to the spruce fir in the coldest time of year.
Yeah.
If it was me, I would go to the deepest hollow I could find. You know?
Well, they're perfectly adapted to the cold. Moose cannot, they virtually can't be cold stressed in a lab, the adults. The calves can, but they're perfectly adapted for cold weather, for deep snow. And so, like the Ossipees are a perfect example. Moose near the Ossipee Mountains tend to move up into the Ossipees in the wintertime, where there's, they can get up into more low-growing forage and have forage nearby all winter long.
Hmm. So, throughout the year, I know there's busy times for a biologist and there's not busy times, but I have to assume that fall is, like, really hectic because you've got the moose are in rut then, and that's when the hunting season occurs.
Right.
What's it like for a moose biologist in October?
So we're a little agency. So I'm not just the moose biologist. Mm. I'm also the general biologist for Region 2, along with someone else. And so we have a lot of things we have to do. So we're stalking pheasants. We're running moose check stations. And then instantly we're running deer check stations. So it's a pretty busy time.
Perfect storm.
It is. Yeah, we're busy.
But it's got to be tiring too, especially I know during the busy season for eagles, there's not much sleep.
Right. Yes. So it's long days, very long days sometimes, and physically demanding days. And it's about 30 days without a day off. And I'm sorry, my hair's white, and I'm an old lady.
when you started, New Hampshire didn't have a moose hunt.
That's correct.
And I assume one of the reasons that your job was created was to gather the data needed to determine if a moose hunt was sustainable or not.
Yes, exactly.
Now it's been going on for nearly 30 years, right? Close to?
Yeah,
25 years at least?
Like 28 years, yeah.
Oh, so what's changed in the moose hunt over the years, and what do you see going forward?
So I've had this really unique position in the life cycle of moose in the state. When I came on, they were making a wonderful comeback from what had been a reduction in moose prior to New Hampshire Fish and Game Department ever being formed. Moose were really hunted virtually to extinction for food and clothing.
In our state.
In our state. Yeah. Actually, in many portions of North America. And so over time, with protection and changing values and a different kind of environment from, we were a field environment. We raised sheep in the 1800s.
Right.
All those forests grew back. Our forest products industry was born. Suddenly you had clear cutting and you had the perfect opportunity for moose to make a strong comeback. So I came on board when they were really strongly growing and they were almost statewide when I came on board. They once again recolonized the entire state. Their numbers grew quite rapidly because you had this almost virgin environment for them. And at the same time, unfortunately, we were having changes due to our changing climate. So our winters were getting shorter. That was giving parasites that are bad for moose an advantage. And suddenly we noticed, even though moose had plenty of habitat, they weren't doing well. So back in the 2001, we did our first collaring to see what was going on. And moose have been declining since then. They've actually kind of stabilized and even grew a little bit the last couple of years. But parasites are a huge factor at this point.
Right. So and all that circles back to gradually changing weather conditions.
Our changing weather is impacting many species, and moose is the big one here in the state because it's such an icon. People are so familiar with it. And
so I'd like to talk a little more about parasites with moose and how they're changing the population. Everybody's familiar, I think, with ticks now, but there's other parasites. Is that right?
That's correct. So in the southern portion of our state, it is actually brain worm. And both of these parasites are brought by white-tailed deer. In the case of brain worm, it is very much related to deer density. And as our winters get shorter, that's good for deer, great for deer. And our deer populations are increasing. And in North America, the research has shown that when your deer densities get above 10 to 13 per square mile, moose densities tend to decline from the brainworm parasite.
Okay, so it's not because the habitat is different. It's because
of
the deer bring with
them.
The
deer bring. And as deer densities increase, the chance for moose to pick this parasite up increase as well. So we are in excess of that density pretty much everywhere south of the White Mountains. Mm-hmm. And so moose densities are declining, not, though, as quickly as we anticipated they would in light of our relatively high deer densities for that parasite involvement. And what I just found out might be happening is, oddly enough, we need a secondary host, a land snail or a slug, to carry the parasite from the deer feces for the moose to consume it and get the parasite.
So they eat the slug while they're eating vegetation?
Right, exactly.
Cool. And well, not so, so cool.
So what has happened, though, is acid rain, ironically enough, kills off our snails. And so may
But it
fact,
kills off all snails, not just the...
That's right, kills off all snails. And so our snail populations, as we get control of acid rain, will begin to rebound.
And that's bad for moose.
And that's bad for moose. Oh. So in a very ironic twist of fate, acid rain is kind of helping moose out while it's possibly killing off all our maple trees.
And then real quickly, the ticks.
Yes. So the ticks are reliant. Deer bring them, but that's all they do. Once ticks become associated with moose, moose density causes higher levels of ticks. So the higher moose density you have, the worse the tick problem. Mm-hmm. When you couple that with shorter winters, which allow the ticks to get on moose for a longer period of time, you've got the perfect storm. So our winters are getting shorter. The ticks are here already. They're on moose. So what may actually be helpful for moose, which is what we're looking at, is much lower densities than we currently have.
When I'm hiking in the White Mountains at, say, 2,500 feet and it's balsam fir around me and there's a little snow on the ground still in March.
Yes.
And I see blood in the snow.
Yes.
What am I seeing? Is that from moose?
That's from a hiker. No.
Oh.
No. Yeah, so that is typically from moose. It's the ticks. You'll have so many ticks on a moose, they are like shingles on a roof. You cannot find the moose's hide. And, of course, the ticks get engorged with blood, and the moose lies down, and the ticks burst. And the ticks don't just take a blood meal. They continually take blood into their mouths and eject it from the side of their mouths. Really disgusting.
This is really pleasant.
Yeah, great. It's a horrible way to die. Yeah. And that's, unfortunately, unless we were able to address climate change and bring winters back, that is the...
Yeah. And a lot of moose then are weakened by that, even if they're not killed. And
exactly.
If they're female moose that are going to have calves, that results in loss of calves, I would guess.
Right. So what we're seeing is even though the adults are not dying from this, their weights are declining.
They're in worse shape.
Right. They cannot gain enough weight to be maximally productive.
Wow. So you have a new research project that's going on now that you're in the middle of. What can you tell me about that a little bit?
So our original research project took place 2001 through 2005, and we collared for 3 years. And we thought, okay, we learned all we needed to know. But what we saw in the interim is that things seemed to be getting worse. Tick impacts seemed to be worsening. So we did this again, the mortality study, again, and we asked Maine if they could come on board and Vermont so we could see how tick impacts were changed by areas further north that still had long snow-covered periods.
Maine.
And areas in the same longitudinal plane that had much fewer moose, Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a lot of data to look at.
You're still in that study.
We're still in that study. But we are seeing that further north, where winters are longer, Maine does in fact see a little less mortality, a little better productivity. Vermont just came on board. Our own studies show that, yes, indeed, mortality from ticks has worsened here in New Hampshire. So we will have to sit down and really look at that whole picture as we go forward in time, but it's beginning to look like it would. If we can't change our progress with climate change, then we are going to have to look at how we can help moose. And primarily, it's by reducing their density.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have even fewer moose, but they won't be dying these horrible tick-laden deaths.
Hmm. Well, I can't let you get away without asking you about the break for moose signs and that whole thing. I mean, people come into New Hampshire from southern New England, and one of the things that they see right away is the break for moose signs. How did that whole thing get going?
Sadly, several people had been killed in just a couple of days by moose vehicle collisions. And so there was we had to do something to alert the driving public that, you know, there's not just skunks on the road. You've got to be a little careful. The state of Alaska had a signage program, and I was able to basically bring that knowledge mm-hmm. back. And we met with DOT and Department of Safety, state troopers, and developed the whole Break for Moose program and all these signs, which when they first went up were quite disappeared at an alarming Ooh. Rate. So,
did you ever find any of those?
I never did find where people took them, but poor DOT, they were tired of replacing them. Yeah. So
you've had lots of conversation with moose over the years.
Mm.
I wonder if you picked up much of their language. I was thinking I might challenge you to a moose call contest. What do you think?
Oh, okay.
I bet you can
sure.
do a pretty good one, huh?
So should I
start first?
Yes, give me your calf call.
A calf call? Oh, my gosh. I was actually going for a female in heat. Let me try that. Ain't good?
It's terrible.
Oh.
So that would be a nice bull call,
though. Oh, shoot.
Yeah, so the cow is... And that's just the beginning.
Oh,
I mean, she goes on and on and on.
So if we overlay the bull over that, we'd have a pretty good thing going on.
And that, yes, exactly.
And October sounds like that, right?
Yes. And then the calf would be in the background going, very disappointed that the cow wasn't paying attention to it anymore.
That's fantastic. Chris, I really want to thank you for taking time to come inside and join us on Something Wild. It was a pleasure.
Well, thank you. It was great to see you.
Yeah. Something Wild is a joint production of New Hampshire Audubon, the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests, and NHBR. So, I have a fondness for moose poop.